Joining us on the line from Israel, Rolene Marks for the Israel Report. Rolene, a very good morning to you. How are you? It must be strange for you to listen to these COVID reports. I know you went to the Kotel yesterday. You took names of people to pray for. But you're living in an environment where COVID just isn't a thing at the moment.
Well, it's so strange you say that, and I have to say I'm just in recovery from the sports question. I always get a little bit anxious when I hear that sports question. I have to be honest, but yeah, you know, my husband and I were chatting this morning as we heard of loss from another very, very special person, somebody who a lead in the community, the magnificent Victor Gordon. May his memory be blessed. And we were saying that we almost are living in a bubble here in Israel. And, you know, as we get very close to changing governments this weekend, we do have to acknowledge the role that the outgoing government has played in helping this country fight the pandemic. And it came, and I have to be very honest, it came with very, very early lockdowns and also emphatic campaigns. Protect granny and grandpa, isolate, and heavy fines for anybody not doing that. So it was taken at the outset extremely, extremely seriously. And we also have to remember we're a much smaller country than South Africa. We're also a country that's used to mobilizing very, very quickly, whether it is to lock down or it is to roll out vaccines. You know, we have to give kavod, we have to give acknowledgement to the government for the way they handled procuring the vaccine and the way that we are just set up here. You know, we have the infrastructure, we have the processes in place to have made it the success that it has been, and it hasn't been without its hurdles. We also have to be honest about that. But yeah, at the moment, we are kind of living in a bubble from the rest of the world, as it's announced that from the 1st of July, we will open up to vaccinated individuals from certain countries. We don't know which countries they are yet. But last night at the Kotel, it was very, very special. It was very, very meaningful. I went down after meetings in Jerusalem, specifically with the names of people who could do with our prayers. And it was also very emotional to be back at the Kotel after nearly 2 years of not being able to go down there.
Incredible. And just on that note around Victor Gordon, and this is a notice from the Chevra Kedisha, Victor Gordon, head of the South African Jewish Board at Pretoria, passed away. His funeral is going to be in Pretoria later today at 2 p.m. And Chai FM, of course, wishing all of the mourners a long life, and may they be comforted amongst the mourners of Zion and Jerusalem. Taking a look at some of the Israel news, Sunday's a big day, isn't it?
Sunday is a big day, and you know, many people have been placing their bets whether or not it's going to happen, but it looks like it's going to happen. Those 48 hours for the Netanyahu bloc to kind of lodge any complaints, look at the deals that are on the table as we move this government over to what will hopefully be a unity government, have run out. And now all that remains is for Sunday swearing in to happen, and the new Prime Minister, who will be Naftali Bennett for 2 years, then followed by Yair Lapid, they will take their place, and the very important job of governing the country has to start. And we're all looking at this because it's absolutely phenomenal, the makeup of this government. We've got members of, you know, more far-right leaning political parties, Yisrael Biteinu, Yamina, sitting in a government with far-left Meretz, Labour, which is kind of center to the left. We've got the dead center parties, Blue and White, and Yesh Atid. And then coming from seemingly out of space, Howard, we have the Islamist Ra'am party. You know, so those of you criticizing Israel, saying that, you know, we're not very democratic and using the A word, you know, what we are seeing playing out is really something quite incredible. The money now is whether or not that will last. And this past week, every effort has been put in place with negotiating deals to make sure that this government does hold firm. Interestingly enough, one of the clauses going into this deal is that Naftali Bennett cannot bolt from the coalition, which is quite fascinating because he has been criticized by his voter base for, you know, getting into a deal with more left-leaning parties. It is not everybody calmed down, put down the brown paper bags. It is not a leftist government. I know that there's been a lot of hysteria from the anti-change bloc, saying it's a leftist government, it's a leftist government. It's not a leftist government. It's a government very much made up of different parties, bringing different perspectives, bringing different clauses. Some we hope will heal rifts with diaspora Jews. One such issue on that is the issue of an egalitarian press spot at the Kotel. And the other is the conscription of the Haredim to the RDF. And very interesting is another clause saying no unilateral moves that could harm a potential peace process. So from this new government's perspective, they're already thinking moving towards some kind of process for peace.
Absolutely incredible. What's interesting as well is what's going to happen with the Likud. First of all, is Benjamin Netanyahu allowed to remain head of the Likud? Is it a separate position? And if so, is he likely to?
Well, this is the interesting question because now his voter base have seen him substantially weakened. He is now ousted as prime minister, which means that anyone in his party can challenge him for the leadership of the Likud party. So we've heard already from Yuli Edelstein. He's the former speaker of the Knesset. He's the outgoing minister of health, somebody who commands a phenomenal amount of respect in Israel and in the diaspora Jewish community. One of the great Soviet Jewry icons, Yuli Edelstein, also spending a lot of time in the Gulag, in a prison for being a refusenik, an incredible, incredible history, but somebody very, very much respected in Israel. He has announced that at the next primaries, he will challenge Netanyahu for the leadership of the Likud. And interestingly enough, we are hearing from Nir Barkat, the former mayor of Jerusalem, a former start-up millionaire, and also married to a South African, which of course always helps
Behind every political successful campaign. Man is a South African woman.
That's what I tell my husband, Howard.
Just keep telling him until eventually he believes you.
That's what I keep telling him. But I mean, we've seen it with Zev Bielski, the mayor of Ranana. We see it with Nir Barkat and several other
He's been quiet, Nir Barkat. I thought we would have heard more from him over the last while.
Well, he's been quiet. I think he's been like most strategic strategists. Oh, I need a third cup of coffee.
Okay, hold on. I just want to stop you right there. Earlier this week, I spoke to Statistics South Africa, and about four times I fell over the word, right? The very next day, I speak to Anthony Reich, and he tries to say the word statistics, and he fell over that word. I made him feel better by telling him what happened to me. You've just done the same. It's clearly not a word for radio.
It's not a word for radio, but Nir Barkat has obviously been watching what is happening and perhaps thinking of his potential future within the Likud party. You know, Bibi Netanyahu has faced a lot of criticism over the years for not encouraging or planning for succession.
Yes.
And I think that potential future leaders of the party have been waiting for where they could see an opportunity or an in to challenge him for the leadership of the party.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping that there will be a change in leadership, because I think the Likud has such an important role to play, but they have been curtailed and there hasn't been any allowance really for or planning around succession, in my view. The one thing that is potentially a concern is Bibi had a tremendous amount of support from evangelical Christians around the world. Is that likely to remain so under this new government?
Well, that is a very, very important question, because many evangelicals supporters in the United States have expressed their concern that he's going to be out of power or no longer the prime minister. But we also have to remember that Bibi is still a human being and cannot be prime minister of Israel forever. Mm. You know, for whatever reason, there will be a time where it will come to an end, whether it is now or whether it is in 10 years' time. It was never going to last forever. And it's a concern of us that support of Israel should be contingent on who the leadership of the country is, or who the leader of the country is. However, we have heard from many Christian organizations, one of them being Bridges for Peace in South Africa, saying that their support is for Israel no matter what. And there are some that say that within younger evangelicals, a movement of Netanyahu out as the prime minister could increase their support for Israel, because there has been a dip in support for Israel amongst the younger generation of evangelical Christians. So it's going to be interesting to watch going ahead, but we really hope that for many it's not contingent on who is or who isn't the prime minister.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm sure it will, because it's biblical. It's not Bibi himself, you know what I mean. But the other story that I have just been so excited to talk to you about was, of course, the very, very big announcement that that there was an award. An award was given, and I think it's an important one. I think we need to appreciate the significance of Al Jazeera receiving a journalism award from Hamas, who, of course, value free press.
Well, this is just extraordinary, but this is not April Fool's. It's not a Purim spiel. Al Jazeera have received an award for their highly professional coverage of the Gaza conflict. I'm going to read those words again. Highly professional. And I know that there are many news agencies in South Africa that take their news from Al Jazeera. Just so that you know, taking news from Al Jazeera is taking news from a news organization heavily funded and founded in Qatar that is sponsoring or that is in bed or in office space, Howard, mm-hmm. with an internationally recognized terrorist organization. I know the word terrorist is not very popular in some parts of the world, but that's how they are seen by the international
community. That's what they community. Are, that's what they are. You can try and rebrand them any way you want, but when you attack civilians and you wish for the death of an entire religious group of people, you're a terrorist. Call it whatever you want. I think it's so dangerous to allow people to remove that word.
I totally agree with you there. And we also cannot forget that they do this while entrenched within their own civilian infrastructure. Mm. So they are committing acts of terror on their own civilian population and on ours. And as you so rightly said, they're not exactly a organization known for encouraging the freedom of the press. In fact, we know what happens to journalists and any members of the press that don't toe the party line, so to speak. But you know what, Howard? For me, it raises an interesting question. There has been so much controversy over whether or not Israel was right to raise the media building, the Al Jalla building, in the Gaza Strip that housed both the Associated Press and Al Jazeera. Well, you know, I mean, of course, that guy in the coffee canteen with the missile launcher on his shoulder looked a bit suspicious, Howard.
But Al Jazeera and Associated Press missed that, right?
Of course they missed it. That's the extent of the incredible investigative journalism. But there is no way, having now on record received this award from Hamas, that Al Jazeera did not know that Hamas were in that building.
That's interesting. That is very, very interesting. No, but it's obvious. And what I'm finding more and more alarming is the role that the media are playing. And it's not only in the Israel-Gazan-Palestinian conflict. The role of media, I'm becoming very, very concerned about it. We are, there is almost a playbook that needs to be followed, and the right questions aren't answered. The fact that Hamas awarded this prize, or whatever it was, to Al Jazeera should have been covered by every mainstream media publication around the world. People should have been asking questions. Not once have we seen an article about the freedom of press in Gaza. Why aren't we seeing it? Why is no, if they're writing about so much, why are they not writing it? Why is the South African press not writing or barely mentioning the 4,000 rockets? Why aren't they doing this? It is irresponsible, and it's bordering on criminal, actually.
Well, it's not just that. It's that we now have a situation with the BBC, and I urge you all to go into Honest Reporting and sign the petition that commissioned the Balin Report 15 years ago, which was an investigation into how the BBC covers the Israel-Palestinian conflict. And the findings were so damning against the BBC for their unbelievable bias that they've buried the report. So please, when you can, go onto Honest Reporting and demand that the BBC release the Balin Report. And we need to start, as media consumers, holding every news channel accountable. You know, we're not expecting them to sing Hatikva anytime soon, but we are expecting them to cover both sides with balance.